the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 192 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol, as featured on The Six Shooter, starring Jimmy Stewart. I'm your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from Base Camp in the Treasure Valley. Hey, it's December. You know what that means, don't you, kids? It's Christmas time. And I know not everybody celebrates Christmas. And even those that do may not be celebrating it for the religious background. But if there's one thing that Christmas time evokes, it's tradition and nostalgia, right? So many people have Christmas stories. So many people have things that they do every year around Christmas time to celebrate the holidays. And I know it, and I don't think I've done it every year, but I do try to find some Christmas-related old-time radio show to present to you here on the podcast in December. And I'm doing it again this year. Last year, I ran a Christmas episode from the Burns and Allen radio show, and I think most people enjoyed that, and they have several of them that to choose from. And so I thought about running another one of those again, maybe making that a tradition. And I'm sure we will, but I decided to go a different direction. One of the other traditions I've kind of started on this podcast is to run every once in a while a story from The Six Shooter, which is a Western old-time radio show starring Jimmy Stewart. And when I think of Jimmy Stewart, you know, he is synonymous with Christmas to me. Of course, because of It's a Wonderful Life. And I do enjoy watching that movie every year, and I enjoy watching Jimmy Stewart any chance I get. But one of the other Christmas staples for me and for many, many others is the Christmas Carol story from Charles Dickens. And so I found this episode of The Six Shooter that kind of combines those two. And we can talk more about that after you all have a chance to listen to this presentation. This episode was broadcast on December 20th, 1953. So let's go ahead and get to it. Please come with me and let's journey into a December in the Old West.
In jail!
Cratchit! You had your call for the day, and there will be no more.
Begging your pardon, sir. I simply thought, sir, since it is Christmas Eve,
this would be a disastrous time for you, Cratchit, to find yourself without a position.
Oh, no, sir. Yes, sir, you're absolutely right, sir. Forgive me, sir.
If you spent more time tending to your job, you wouldn't have time to feel the cold. Ah, blasted help situation. You'd be wanting a feather bed and tea service next to night. You never could be more down here.
They'll be singing, gonna be singing Christmas carols by the old corral, celebrating, congregating, and exchanging greetings by the old corral.
Here's a last-minute Christmas shopping suggestion.
Jingle bells, bells of NBC. Oh, what joy to cook and bake while listening merrily. Pots and pans, sink and stove, work goes easily. Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
What will you hear in your kitchen after Christmas? Bacon sizzling, coffee perking, dishes clinking, and, if you're lucky, a new sound. NBC radio listening on that new set. The perfect gift to lighten Mother's long hours in the kitchen.
Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Make yourself home.
You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. Seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well...
I heard Aunt Lily say so. Christmas is for children. That's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense. I heard her tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. They died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
Is it getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted, a pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. It seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow who felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to him?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect... Now, mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, Eben, something like that.
Eben,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well... Being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No. He didn't have a ranch house. Evan wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. See, he just lived alone in town, had himself a steady room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Evan was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks. Powder out. I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how are the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rents on the livery stable.
Well, now, Uncle Eb.
Oh, go on, get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold it.
Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Evan's hotel room at a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Evan had another visitor. He was a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking. He just plain, ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying there?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
But one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
that
to rent it.
That ain't my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well. Then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
I wasn't much use in arguing. Quorum knew that. So he put on his hat and shoveled out. Now Evan was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and it's time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed, and right about then, the strangest thing happened.
What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Eben saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair and nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake!
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he was just imagining all this.
I got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back. And hanging down from it were 2 saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag him across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Oh, sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but... Well, what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that get-up?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure. I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Why, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I've built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Eben, to watch him and not be able to help him. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
There must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Jake, tell me what to do.
Eben, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Eben. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake. Don't leave me without it. Jake.
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye. A little glimmer on the floor. And he bent over to pick it up.
A gold nugget. Now where on earth did he...
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
We're interrupting our story for only a moment, and only to tell you, our unseen audience, that you have helped more than you may realize to make this a very Merry Christmas for all of us on this program. Your being with us each week, your many kind letters, have told us that all the work that goes into bringing you the Six Shooter has not been in vain, and we're grateful. So, friends, from all of us, Jimmy Stewart and the cast, our writer, our director, engineers, and sound technicians, our best wishes for a happy holiday season. Oh, yes, and before I forget it, beginning December 31st, the Six Shooter will be on the air on Thursdays instead of Sundays. That's beginning Thursday the 31st. The time of broadcast will be listed in your local newspaper. Thank you. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Gee, with a gold nugget. Then Jake's ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yeah, I just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
Well, what happened then? Did the other spook turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. And he was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed, wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep, and he's too scared, you know? It was kind of peculiar. Evan was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Evan's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella, oh, maybe 18, 19, all dooted up the way young bucks like to dress, you know, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Evan. Reckon you've been expecting.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with you?
It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Evan. Let's shove on.
Well, the next thing Evan knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together and listening to a tall, white-bearded man. He was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto
and
you. You shall find the baby.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, oh, about 10 years old, with hollow cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Evan himself. On a Christmas day, a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
No, I don't want to look at him anymore, can't you? Show me another Christmas.
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Evan and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Evan saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but he was lying on a blanket staring up at the ceiling. And then his pal, Jake, came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Ed. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. Oh, the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost,
"Oh, dear. How I wish I..."
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young schoolmarm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped the tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Evan. But I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan. But you are. You're courting something else.
Bill.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan. Whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks. And finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
Hey, well, what's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present. If you've got no objection.
Well, the hotel room just melted away, and Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, as busy as summer coals. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was thinking about old Evan.
That's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did he want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my Jim, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat.
And Bob looked all around the room. He was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. But little Tim, he wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am.
So, Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house back in the livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see. And she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Eben came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas. And there are two men standing on a street corner and coat collars turned up so to keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house over on the side street in the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him. Funny, isn't it?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. That woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger, was a tombstone, all covered with weeds. Eben could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. No. No, no! What's this? Where am I?
And you know what? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Eben didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stores being closed gave Eben quite a problem. Well, he'd just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Eben's buildings. And when Eben told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I'd better make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Eben was on his way, and he headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Eben was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, he's laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they played games, you know.
Because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
The next morning, though, that's what Eben enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha. Step a little lively.
If he could just get out there before his foreman started tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, whoa, Martha. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
Well, it was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh! This is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fellow.
Oh, but please,
that
don't...
cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then... we're building a new ranch house in its place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless us. Everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, mister, real fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
So as I'd understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no. I didn't have that in mind, especially. The story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Maybe if I had to give Aunt Millie something, a present maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give her? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things that don't cost a penny, not a single red cent, you know.
Hmm?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down. With a little fixing and maybe a few doodads from around the house, I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree out of that.
I suppose so, but what good's a tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Johnny, you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson's Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, mister, Sarah and Emily.
Oh, that's all. I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
I couldn't take it, mister.
Oh, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. But I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it would mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was the cause of you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well,
it would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
There's Aunt Nellie out in the yard. She looks mad in a wet hand.
Well, there is a resemblance. I'll have to admit that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carville? I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt Nellie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
This gentleman won't cut it down. I'll just take it inside. Be right back, mister.
If we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one present waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no. It wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas. You know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No. You mustn't get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
I think I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for him, will you? I wonder if you'd give this to him.
Hmm?
Yeah, tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
So long, man.
Oh, God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Please remember now, beginning December 31st, the Six Shooter will be on Thursdays instead of Sundays. We hope you'll join us in our new time. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. The transcribed story was written by Frank Burt in collaboration with Charles Dickens. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Howard McNair played Scrooge, and special music was by Basil Adlam. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents are fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, until Thursday the 31st, this is Hal Gibney speaking. Merry Christmas. Hear Rex Harrison and Anna Lee in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
So there you go. There's Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol from The Six Shooter starring Jimmy Stewart. You know, I don't know if you could number the amount of adaptations or presentations that people have done on A Christmas Carol. It truly is a classic. Worldwide, I think. You know, I'm not saying everybody, like in India and Africa and China, at least in most of the Western world, it's a classic that's renowned and its message has lasted for decades. And I, you know, and I'm usually a sucker for it. Sometimes I roll my eyes and I'm like, again with the Christmas Carol. Not that I don't like the original story. I love the original story, and there's many adaptations that I love. And I usually try to seek out a new adaptation every year for it. And so here we have a Western version of it. We have Britt Ponsett here reconfiguring the story to tell to this young kid that's running away from the orphanage. So it's set with characters that he can understand, with the Western themes. And I did almost sweep past it because it's just another adaptation, right? But I really think the framing device of this, where we have Britt Ponsett talking to this kid, and then they go back, he takes him back to the orphanage, and he gives him a gift that he can give to his foster mother or whatever, or the orphanage, and talks to her and gives her the knife to give to the kid as a present. And I think that was enough for me to make it above and beyond just, you know, a Western take on the Christmas Carol story. But I really would be interested to hear what you guys think. Did you enjoy this show? And of course, it helps to have it narrated by Jimmy Stewart. And of course the movie It's a Wonderful Life itself has its own Ebenezer Scrooge character, right? We have Mr. Potter. Unfortunately, Mr. Potter never does get redeemed or he's never visited by these ghosts. And that's not the point of that story, obviously. But one of the things that always bothers me about It's a Wonderful Life is Potter gets to keep the $8,000. Nobody goes back and realizes that Mr. Potter is the one that stole the money, essentially. And I guess, you know, maybe it doesn't matter because the whole point of the end of that movie is that because everybody in the community loves George, they're willing to give back to him. And it doesn't matter what happened to the $8,000. But I don't know, there's just a part of me that's like, man, there should be some justice there. That the police would investigate and find out where that money went to. Of course, you know, Potter would be smart enough to hide it and nobody would ever know. But that's one of the things I always think about when I watch It's a Wonderful Life. And there was this great sketch, and I probably talked about it here on the podcast before, but there was a Saturday Night Live sketch where after the ending of the movie, somebody comes in, I can't remember who it is, comes in and says,
I remembered what I did with the money, the $8,000.
Well, that's great, Uncle Billy. Well, what'd you do with it?
I was in the bank. I had it in a newspaper. I remember giving it to someone.
Who'd you give it to?
No, wait. Now, I just called Clarence at the bank. He told me that old man Potter deposited exactly $8,000 right after I left. It was him!
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go get it!
Where are you?
And so the whole town storms down to Mr. Potter's office, and John Lovitz is playing Mr. Potter, and of course Dana Carvey is doing his Jimmy Stewart / George Bailey. George Bailey ends up kicking the crap out of the old man. And they have this dummy of him, you know. So they're throwing him up in the air like he's just getting trampled to death or whatever. Beaten to death or whatever. And I always laugh every time I see that sketch. That was pretty genius. But I guess, you know, going back to the Christmas Carol itself, I mean, it's really a masterpiece. A work of pure genius by Dickens. And it's well worth reading it in full, as well as watching your favorite adaptations of it. And so if you've never read the story, or it's been a while, that's your homework assignment for this Christmas season, is to reread A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And if you want to watch your favorite adaptation, yeah, but by all means, go ahead, watch Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. I have no problem with that. But I think I'll let you go for now. I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays, and that wherever you are that you can find peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Journey on. The Journey Into podcast is produced under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License, which means that you are encouraged to share this podcast with as many people as you would like. But please don't change it or sell it, and let people know where you got it from.